It's Curtain Call. I'm Charles Sipos. In today's program, I chat first with director Craig Miller and actors Edward MacLeod and Elizabeth Henry, as well as playwright Cecilia Tisci. We talk about the world premiere of her new play about Jack London, The House That Jack Built, September 9th through 25th at 6th Street Playhouse. Next, artistic director and CEO Amy Miller talks about Transcendence Theatre Company's Broadway Under the Stars Gala Celebration, September 9th through 11th at Jack London State Park in Glen Ellen. That's what's coming up next on today's Curtain Call. It's Curtain Call. I'm Charles Sipos. In this segment of the program, I'm speaking with four folks who are here in studio and one on phone about the new play, The House That Jack Built. It's about Jack London. It runs September 9th through 25th at 6th Street Playhouse. And here in studio to talk with me about it are its director, Craig Miller. Welcome.
Hey, Charles.
And actors, Edward MacLeod, who plays Jack London.
Hey there, Charles.
And Elizabeth Henry, who plays Charmian London. Welcome.
Hello there. Thank you.
Great to have you back, Beth. And on the phone is Cecilia Tisci, who is the playwright, and she is also a professor at Vanderbilt University, from where she is talking to us. Hi, Cecilia.
Glad to be here. Hello, Charles. Good to be here. And hi to Craig, Edward, and Elizabeth.
Great to have you on, all of you. And I want to come to you first, Cecilia, and ask you how this play came about.
Well, I was writing a book on Jack London, and that is deep research. And initially, I thought, just as Hal Holbrook has played Mark Twain for decades, wouldn't it be interesting if Jack London took the stage for an evening? But then I realized, no, this should be a drama, high stakes in his personal life, in his fame as an author. And so I took a theater course. And I began to write in a notebook. I will say this: I've written several mystery novels, and that means I've written a lot of dialogue. But I quickly learned, Charles, that the depth of research that's necessary for a playwright goes well beyond any lines that anyone might hear on the stage. You really have to plumb it deep.
Well, you are used to research. I understand you've written seven books, and I know you're a scholar. You're a professor of English and of history as well there at Vanderbilt, right?
Well, American Studies, and that lets a person deal with literature, and this is American literature, and in its relation to the wider culture. And Jack London is a perfect author, never cocooned himself, traveled all over the world, war correspondent, photographer, adventurer, sailor. Your listeners no doubt could tick off on their fingers many of his other activities, sports writer. So here was someone actively in American culture at the turn of the 20th century, those opening exciting years, and this to be captured on stage is a wonderful opportunity.
All right, Jack London, as most of you know, is a native son here in Sonoma County, and I'm wondering, Craig Miller, as a director, how did you bring this play to 6th Street Playhouse for its world premiere?
Well, I'd have to give most of that credit to Cecilia. She's actually the one who approached me. And this was after plans had already been made for a symposium celebrating the centennial of his death, which is happening over in Napa, the middle weekend of the run of our show. And so we were very conscious of that and made every effort to have the world premiere of Cecilia's play coincide with that symposium, not only so that it would make travel arrangements for Cecilia to be here to see her play much easier, but also because there will be a lot happening in this area in celebration of him at that time. And we're activists in our community as a theater company, and we just decided that this was really, really important for us to take on. The play was excellent. It's a wonderful portrait of the man past his fame as a writer and really as a person in our community who not just our community locally, but also the community of the United States of America, and his fight for social justice for the working class and making things better. Mm-hmm. Using his fame and using his position as a platform for exacting that.
It seems like it's a timely thing to be talking about, even in Jack London's direct legacy to us. So we'll talk about that, but I want to come to our actors who are here in studio. Edward McLeod plays Jack London, and Elizabeth Henry plays Charmian, and his wife. Give us an idea of how you come to these characters. Edward, you first.
I had actually was at the theater and talked to Craig, and I were talking about different activities, and he asked what I was up to in the fall, and it just so happened I was available, and it's been a while since I've been on stage. It's been a year and a half, and so I looked at this play and did quick research on Jack. Of course, I knew who he was. But I went a little further than that and just saw what a tremendous honor it would be to try to portray this individual, this legend out there. And so after that, it was really studying the minimal footage that's there, reading as many of his books, as many of his 50 books that he has. Of course, I couldn't tackle all of that. Read a couple of his biographies, reached out to the playwright, and started talking to her about it. And then it was... like any other character, find his movement, find his voice, and went from there.
Edward and Cecilia, I'd like you to talk about your conversation in preparation for Edward's preparing this role.
Well, let me just jump in here and say, I had learned when I took my course in playwriting that actors, male and female, do a lot of personal research for any role they are going to undertake. I had somewhat forgotten that, doing my own research. But when Edward called with his questions, key to principal parts of the script, turning points in the script, can you tell me, he would ask, a little more about this relationship? I want to go deeper. Can you tell me about him and his wife? What does this scene really show to you, and what might I be thinking about? And when Edward told me how much preparation he had done, I was really impressed, and I think any audience member is also going to be impressed to see not Edward McLeod up there, but Jack London on the boards.
Beautiful. Beth Henry, did you talk with the playwright Cecilia Tisci as well?
No, I didn't get that opportunity yet. Today's the first time.
Okay. Go for it.
Well, let me just again say, yes, Jack is a challenging character, but so is Charmian. She is a woman of many moods, and the play, I know, will be very demanding, and I'm confident that with Craig's direction and with Edward as the partner, that Elizabeth is going to show those moods of Charmian London. Some feel that she should have a biography of her own on the marketplace, and maybe that will happen.
I totally agree. I mean, doing my research for this, she's just as colorful and just as diverse as Jack. It was amazing to me. I'd been out to the state park several times in the past 20 years or so, and she was the one who kept his legacy alive after he was dead and really kept his writings alive. And she was an amazing woman.
Talk a little bit about who Charmian was in her own right, Beth.
Oh, well, that's very interesting.
And particularly how her personality manifests in this play.
She was a very strong-willed woman and wanted to be a person in her own rights since she had been very young and raised by probably what would be considered hippies nowadays. And that certainly went far to promoting her own individualism. She worked as a secretary in a shipping company in San Francisco, living in Oakland. And that was a job that was a man's job, not a woman's job. And she rode astride her horse in public. And that was also considered extremely forward and not – and individualistic is a good word for that.
Mm-hmm. So I think we have an excerpt of the play, and I think this would be a great time to do it. So would you set this up, please?
Sure.
Craig?
This is an excerpt from the very first time in the play where we get to see Charmian and Jack together. It's scene one of the play. He's just finished talking to Ivy Lee, and Charmian, who has been on a shopping expedition, has come back, and she is trying to persuade him to give up his plans to have a reunion with some of his friends and head back to enjoy an evening of quiet solace at their ranch and enjoy Wolf House in this evening with no one there.
In studio, this is Edwin McLeod and Elizabeth Henry portraying Jack and Charmian London in the play, in an excerpt from the play, The House That Jack Built by Cecilia Tisci.
Tonight, let's walk the grounds to Wolf House by ourselves. We can speak or be quiet as the mood strikes us. Suppose tonight we make love to sanctify our new house.
Home. Our home.
Home, of course. To sanctify our home. We'll take a blanket and a cold supper. The workmen will be gone. We'll be alone. Such a precious, rare moment. My dear, the diary of our love will have a new entry.
But, mate, now you know this day and time are reserved for a reunion with friends I haven't seen for years. Frank Atherton is coming, and Cloudsley, and...
And Martin! Must you?
It'll be fine. It's my party.
Yes, well, it was your boat in the South Seas, too. It was your adventure. Our adventure. Those photographs Martin took trading on your name, he has no right. No right.
Shh. No. Come. Let's take the high road. Let's be cheerful. The gang will gather at Johnny Heinrich's.
First and last chance saloon. Must you insist on the saloon?
Mate, woman, it's like a second home to me.
Well, that's what troubles me, Jack, and should trouble you.
Now, don't get all school marmish on me.
Oh, never. I'm the new woman of the new century, and you're the man.
100 years. That will be my lifetime. 100 years. Our lifetime.
But the doctor said the lifetime of your kidneys.
The lifetime of a survivor. I beat scurvy in Klondike and smashed ankles in Asia. And I beat appendicitis right here at home. So, what else?
You know what else. The South Seas and your poor kidneys. But a party at a saloon, Jack. Why invite temptation?
Oh, give me credit, mate woman. The saloon and I go way back. When I was a jobless hobo with no bed for the night, Johnny always gave me a chair by the fire and welcomed me into a fellowship. Listen, the fellows and I, we'll catch up at Johnny Heinhold's and I'll take the late train home. I have a deadline, and the bills for Wolf House are...
piling up.
Like a blizzard in the Klondike. My 1,000 words a day must pay off. A cash blizzard from the New York publishers, that's what we need. You know, a new bank check could be lying in our mailbox at the ranch right now, at this moment. And a big deposit tomorrow morning, so the plan is I'll take the late train and be back by midnight.
Then think of me sitting alone in the cottage at the ranch all evening, typing your manuscripts and the 30 or 40 letters you reeled off on the dictating machine.
Serenaded by the sweet whinnies and nickering of the horses in the new barn.
Another expense after that. Mason cheated you. You misjudged him. You trusted him.
Let's forget that.
Jack, you're too trusting, and you work so much. We must make time to live, or what's the use of living?
Life will begin again when we move into Wolf House, Charmian.
All aboard!
Oh, Jack, just one thing more, please. Promise me. Promise yourself that you'll give John Barleycorn a cold shoulder this evening.
All aboard for Sonoma!
I've got it. Coffee.
Coffee.
My beverage this evening. I commit to coffee.
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 That's Edwin McLeod and Elizabeth Henry here in studio portraying Jack and Charmian London in the new play, The House That Jack Built, which runs September 9th through 25th at 6th Street Playhouse. Also with us is the director of the play, Craig Miller, and by phone, it's playwright Cecilia Tichy. Ah, Cecilia, fantastic.
That was wonderful to hear. Oh,
yes.
I feel I've been at a pre-premiere. I've been at the dress rehearsal. Well, that was just terrific. I loved all of it. Fantastic.
A beautiful reading, Edward and Beth, here in studio. There's so much in this three or so minutes that you just read for us. There's Jack's artistry, his work ethic, his personality. There's Charmian and her own concerns with regard to their livelihood and their way of life and how things are. Jack's alcoholism, just amazing. So, tell us how this excerpt, Craig, fits in. Where is it in the play?
It's right near the beginning. This is the very first time that we're introduced to Charmian, and this is really the it's really kind of a seduction at the beginning of the scene between the two of them, because she knows he has this reunion to go off to, and that's why they've come to San Francisco or down to Oakland, so he can meet up with old friends. And she has, I believe, she has purposely finished her shopping early because she knows the workmen are leaving and they don't have any plans for house guests tonight. And so she's, the whole first part of the scene is we get to see this fun, loving, sexy seduction scene between the two of them that he keeps kind of saying, oh man, this is tempting, but I really need to see these guys. And then of course, we talked in rehearsal about how with each introduction and discovery for her of exactly who he's going to meet with Martin. She was on the South Seas expedition with them on the Snark, the yacht. And, doesn't have a whole lot of love for what Martin Johnson has gone on to do on the coattails of Jack London since that expedition. And so that's one, you know, he steps in it a little bit there, and then he steps even further into it when he admits that he's going to a saloon to Johnny's. And so fireworks really start to go off in the next scene that we see with the two of them, where he has not been able to keep his promise at the saloon, and he comes home, in his words, a little bit jingled, much to her dismay. And then the conversation gets even deeper into their relationship and all the wonderful multifacets and the layers that these two have in their relationship together, which is just excellently captured in the script by Cecilia. So it's a lot of meat. We're having so much fun working on this. It's a great piece.
Cecilia, this is quite an amazing piece, just judging by this very small excerpt, and it's so intense. There's such great intensity here in terms of the amount of information that you're giving us and the amount of insight into the characters. Tell us what it's like to write that, particularly in contrast to the mysteries that you've written and the scholarly works that you've written. You said it takes more research, but I'm sure it takes more than that.
Good question, but may I say, Jack London left another good lines of his own that can be edited and can become a part of the dialogue. I will say as well that I had a lot of help at this end before the script went to Craig out at Sixth Street. I had colleagues in the theater department who read the script, gave me advice. We had two read-throughs in this area by the student theater group at Vanderbilt University, and then by more experienced actors in this area. So each time you hear a reading, you hear lines that need to be changed, sometimes compressed, sometimes cut, and it's sometimes hard to cut lines that you're in love with, but they need to go. So finally, after a lot of revision and paring down, but also very rewarding, so I am thrilled to have the opportunity to see this script come alive at Sixth Street Playhouse, and I can't wait to go. I'll be there for the opening weekend, next weekend, and for the middle weekend, so I count on being able to see 5 performances and would love to see them all, but I have a job here at Vanderbilt University.
Well, Cecilia, we are looking forward to meeting you, and I know you have to go, so we're gonna let you go. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for making time on short notice to join us here on Curtain Call.
Been fun to talk, everybody.
That was Cecilia Tichy, and it's her play about Jack London, the house that Jack built, that runs September 9th through 25th at 6th Street Playhouse. For more information, you can go to 6thstreetplayhouse.com. Still with me in the studio are the director of the play, Craig Miller, and actors Edward McLeod and Elizabeth Henry, who gave that great reading earlier in the segment of Curtain Call. So has this script influenced you or changed you in any way as actors, Beth?
Every script, every production changes you as an actor. You learn new things. You learn new things about yourself. You learn how people interact with the world. Yes, so that's drama in a nutshell, that the storytelling, the sharing, the coming together of what makes us people.
Can you say how that's working in this case for this particular character in this particular play?
Oh, good question. I think, well, for me, it's how she uses her sexuality to get what she wants in that time period, and how we as women still do that in our time period today.
Not a new thing.
It is not a new thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very sweet. And you hear, even in that excerpt that you did, the kind of the power juggling, you know, one way, another way.
Yes.
It's a very different dynamic than we have between the sexes now, but still the same elements at play.
Yeah, and especially, you know, what was interesting about Jack and Charmian is that they really considered each other equals, and they used those monikers, mate woman, mate man. That was their nicknames for each other, and it really emphasized how they were partners in life. And yeah, that was a kind of a new concept.
Mm-hmm. I got that. It's not the only new thing that they were interested in. They were really progressive people, both Jack and Charmian London. So, Edward, what do you have to say about how this role is affecting you?
Well, I would echo Beth's thoughts on, and just that any role you play as an actor really affects you. I let it affect me as much as I can, and I mean, Jack was such a complex individual, and he had so many facets to his life. The adventuring, the early days of his struggles in you know, trying to earn a living for his family. All of those things really played in. But as I look at him as a man, I see the complexities that he has. I think of, and he only lived till 40, and he was able to accomplish all of these amazing, you know, amazing things in his short life. And so,
against a lot of odds, I might add.
Against a lot of odds, yeah.
including his alcoholism.
A lot of odds and a lot of upsets. That was one of the things that really struck me, especially when I was looking at his later days, you know, for Charmian and Jack both. I mean, they lost their child. There won't be another, you know, he has his two daughters, but that was his soulmate with Charmian. And so they lost their one child, and then there was another miscarriage there. So there, and then his main dream of Wolf House, near completion, and then it literally goes up in flames. Mm-hmm. And so to see him struggle with that, you know, and but I look at his that he always maintained a really optimistic attitude about life, about mankind as a whole, and he explored what it really was to be a human being, you know, and he took it as far as he could.
I think back when I was reading the works of Jack London as a preteen and a young teenager, I knew that Jack London was bigger than life, even then. And when you hear an excerpt like this and see a play like this and go to the ruins here in Glen Allen of his estate, you realize that he was indeed bigger than life.
Mm-hmm.
And Charmian must have been as well, because you can't have a mate to somebody who's bigger than life who's not bigger than life herself. So how do you portray that in, I know a lot of it is in the play, but how do you portray that as actors in this play?
Well, you do the research. You definitely got to do the research and find out every aspect you can about these people's life. They're not fictional characters, and so you can't fill in, you know, their life with imaginary happenings. And so that's part of it. And then it's after that, it's really like any other character you take on. You
bring the part of yourselves that are you to it.
And you make it your own. At some point, you have to let go. You know, you do all of that and hope that all the research and all the work you did with your, you know, your fellow actors informs the role that you will be portraying on stage. And you just kind of have to let go and do your best.
Yeah, because they were real people, and so you as a person have that in common with them right away, off the bat, and you can bring everything that you are to it.
Say more about that, Beth. You are bringing who you are to Charmian.
Oh, well, I really love this role because I can bring my sexuality. I can bring the anger. I can bring the mollification. I can bring the pain of living with someone who has alcoholism. You know, I can bring the aggression. You know, they were very competitive together. I can bring athleticism, all of those things. It's a very broad character.
Mm. How about you, Edward? What do you bring, what personally, from who you are as a person to this role of Jack London?
Well, I'm an artist. I love creating. I'm a builder. That's my trade, and so I can really relate to that aspect of it. And as an actor, you're building. This is a craft. You're building a character. You're building a role. So I love that aspect of it as well. But I also a lot of the values that London had about the workers' rights and you know, that struggle and those values, and those definitely are, you know, resonate with my own as well. So when I'm out there and speaking as Jack about his you know, his stance on workplace, his the class struggle, the unfairness that was set up back then with the mega capitalists, I definitely am feeling that you know, I could put myself into that as well. That's still happening. All these issues that he was fighting back then are still happening today in a very real way, you know. So
a timely play.
Yeah, very timely.
There's so much humanity in the work of Jack London. I mean, he tells us a lot about who we are as human beings, particularly in really stressful situations, and often alone, pitted against nature or or dealing with the wilds in some way or another, with animals. And he was a person who felt his humanity incredibly intensely, and that something that I didn't really realize until our conversation now is how much of an advocate he was for other people's humanity, not only in his art, but in his life.
Yeah.
So can you say a bit about how he did that, other than...
Well, he started, that began from, I mean, he got a taste of what it was like to be a worker in those days. And the wage for workers in those days was 10 cents an hour. Mm. And so he had that experience. And he was a very intelligent individual from the get-go, reading and reading and reading. He was steeped in books. And so he had this intelligence, and he brought it into the workplace. And every young person of that era read Horatio Alger and the Rags mm-hmm. to Riches story, and they thought that, you know, if I go out there and I work hard and I'm an honest person and a decent person, I'm going to rise up. That didn't happen. That didn't happen for too many people in that era. And so he was looking for a different way of life, a different order of things, and he found through one of his mentors socialism. And so in 19, he was actually noted in the papers for speaking politically out in Oakland, mm-hmm. that there was this young man out there that was speaking to about socialism and fairness in the workplace and these issues. And so he took it from there. And I really think that, and that's one of the things that's so admirable about him, in my opinion, is he took that and he never let it up. He never sold out with his fame. He always used that and kept his purpose true to the very end. So that's one thing that's really beautiful about him.
He also fought against this notion of being a real American, which was a phrase coined by Theodore Roosevelt, you know, and it really had a lot to do with immigration. Which, you know, I mean, here we are, you know, still dealing. I mean, and racial inequalities, and you know, that you couldn't be African American, you're just American, and you served this flag, and you had no other loyalties or allegiances to your roots. If you were here, you're here. And Theodore Roosevelt even went so far as to say, you know, that if you're in America, you speak English. And so it was, you know, these are the things that Jack London was literally in print in the newspaper battling the president of the United States at times back and forth about, he was not a quiet person.
Right. And somehow he could.
Yeah.
Because he had a voice.
Yes.
He had a voice.
Something, for as many times as we've talked about drama and theater, and especially historical drama, it's not until this interview that it's really landed how important research is, not only for the playwright, but for the actors, because you each talked about your own research as director, as actors, as playwright. And there is a tremendous amount of preparation for this couple hours of stagecraft that we mm-hmm. see when we go to a play. It's not just research, but research is such an important element. And sometimes it's not historical research, or sometimes it's not direct research. It's more like, how did people behave in this era? How did they dress? How did how they dressed affect their behavior? You know, like if you're in a corset, mm-hmm. how does that affect your behavior? Or if you're in, you know, if you're wearing a cape, you know, how does that affect your behavior? If you're wearing a sword, mm-hmm. it can be not only a weapon, but it can be really cumbersome. You know, how do these things affect each other? And you have to know as actors, you have to know as a director, you have to know as a playwright. And here is just a really great example from, you know, a century past and a bit more.
Yeah. And in the theater, we have additional folks on the artistic staff who aid the actors in that research and in that exploration.
Yeah, talk more about
that. We have a dramaturg on the show. Her name is Dr. Nadja Masura. She's a PhD in theater, and she has provided all of the cast members with binders specific to the characters that they're playing, because they're all historical characters,
wow,
with tons of research for them to just dig into and arm themselves with as they set out to portray these characters. We have...
I want to hear from the actors
sure.
what the binders
But we
are
also
like.
Have a vocal, our vocal coach. We have Kate Brickley as our vocal coach, because these people, we don't talk today like these people spoke.
Right.
So and Cecilia has brought so much actual quoted dialogue from interviews and things with Jack London, and the things that he said in Charmian in print are in the play. So, you know, we work on all of those aspects too, because the way that we arrive at the theatricality of the piece is by reminding the audience that we're in 1913, not, you know, 2016.
I want to remind our listeners that this is in the Studio Theater at Sixth Street Playhouse, so you're up close and personal with the actors, and it has to be genuine, or else it doesn't come off. So tell me about these books that are given to you by the dramaturg.
Beth, you know, she did an incredible job. They are literally tomes of information.
How is it helping? Can you give me
example? There's photographs. So when there's a compilation of photographs, so you get to see who these people are. And there's a lot of photographs of Charmian and Jack London. But there's also, she really selected excerpts that inform each one of these was focused on a particular character. So Frank Atherton, Martin Johnson, Charmian, Jack London, Johnny Heinold, all of these people could read about their character and know who they are, what type of experiences they might have had with one another.
Wow.
And
yeah, it's incredibly helpful to have a dramaturg on staff, especially for something like this with a person, a historical character who was so prolifically written about. I mean, there's so much out there about Jack London. There's all these Jack London scholars.
And how about Charmian? I mean, since that's your role. Yeah.
Well, her story is very much wrapped up with Jack's. So there's you can't kick a can at Jack without hitting Charmian.
Charmian had her adventures, though, well after. So she had her.
Oh, yeah.
There's a whole other. There could be a second
play. That's a
different play.
Yeah.
Cecilia? Oh, she's not with us anymore. Cecilia Tisci is the playwright. The play is The House That Jack Built. It runs September 9th through 25th at 6th Street Playhouse. For more information, go to 6thstreetplayhouse.com. Cecilia Tisci was with us by phone earlier in the interview. With us still in studio, our director, Craig Miller. Thanks for coming in.
Of course. Thank you, Charles.
Actor Edward McLeod. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles.
And Elizabeth Henry. Thank you for coming in.
Always a pleasure, Charles.
Okay, let's give away a pair of tickets. Do you want to say a particular performance, or shall it be listener's choice?
Listener's choice.
Okay, listener's choice. Call the number 4 gets the tickets. The number to call is 584-2020, 584-2020. Call the number 4 gets the tickets. Once again, the website is 6thstreetplayhouse.com. That's where you find out about The House That Jack Built. I'm Charles Sipos. It's Curtain Call on KRCB Santa Rosa.
By the time that you were 20, you had jobs aplenty, like columnists and slinging coal and growing old in the factories. After slaving to stay poor, hitting the prison floor, you swore that words would be your trade, your ticket to be free. Jack of London gone at 40, after 50 books and living enough for 3 men twice your age. Jack of London, I've read your stories by the firelight in Alaska. I was glued to every page. '98 was the year to move on to the gold rush in the Yukon. Many men died,
with their dreams ablaze in the snow upon those hills. Ah, but your tales resurrect them. I feel that I've met them in the August heat. To build a fire still gives me a chill. Jack of London gone at 40, after 50 books and living enough for three men twice your age. Jack of London, I fed you stories by the firelight in Alaska. I was glued to every page. A thousand words a day, no matter what, was what you'd say. Even on the road and through the years and over the high seas. Sailing ships and politics, farm and ranch experiments, your writing was the fuel behind a thousand other dreams. But there were heartstrings frayed and torn, and old John Barleycorn, and your holy heat and burn one night somehow. There was darkness to the fame, and others clinging to your name. To tangle you and wrangle you like a bronco to the ground.
It's Curtain Call. I'm Charles Sipos. With me this segment is Amy Miller, who is Artistic Director of Transcendence Theater Company, and they are presenting Broadway Under the Stars this summer, as every summer. And Amy, it's a joy to have you on again.
Well, thank you so much. So happy to be here.
We're already over, 3 of 4 of your sets for this summer. How's the summer been going?
It's been an exceptional summer. It's 2016. It's our fifth season. And actually, we've been celebrating Call of the Wild as our theme because it's the centennial of Jack London passing. And it's been an incredible season. We're into our third show and we're headed into our fourth, which is the gala celebration.
So Jack London is significant because you're performing at the ruins of his home in Jack London, in what is now Jack London State Park. And what an amazing setting. For those who don't know, tell us about the setting there.
It's one of the most extraordinary settings for theater, I think, in the world. It's at Jack London's Beauty Ranch, so there's picnicking and wine before the performance, which is incredible on his Beauty Ranch lawn. And then there's actually the ruins of an old winery that was destroyed in the 1906 earthquake. So it's ruin walls right next to his cottage where he wrote all of his books. So it's completely open air, and the first half of the show you see all the vineyards in the background and birds flying in the air, and by the time the second half comes in, the stars start coming out. We've had different meteor showers in the air, and the moon is incredible, and it's just an incredible outdoor venue.
Okay, so sometimes you say Broadway in the ruins, or our performances in the ruins, and these are state-of-the-art performances. So how can you stage that in the ruins of a winery?
Well, I think the great thing about the ruins is that it strips everything down to its basic form and nature. So you're taking this incredible talent from Broadway, from Hollywood, and you're taking it to the essence of their energy. And the simplicity of it really makes it enjoyable for our audiences. And the great thing about it, too, is that because it's so stripped down, there's so many innovative ways to present in that space. And it always keeps our audiences on their toes for the unique ways that we'll present our shows.
So you're setting up state-of-the-art lighting and sound, and you're really sparing no effort to bring the presentations just like they're done on Broadway.
Correct. I mean, we're so blessed to have so many people that from New York and LA that want to come and perform here in Wine Country. So these shows, especially those who have watched them through the years, are getting bigger and better and coming up with more innovative ways. But they're full Broadway productions almost, like especially some of our shows this season are production number after production number with a cast of about 20 artists that are performing in the shows and a big band that has over 8 or 9 instruments from local musicians, and it's just a great time.
So the next set is the Gala Celebration. It is September 9th through 11th. What's in store for us at the Gala Celebration?
So the Gala Celebration is always the end of the season to celebrate the entire success of the season and to say like one final goodbye before we see everybody the next June. And the great thing about the Gala this year is we're really trying to make it unique from all the shows that everybody's seen. So there's going to be a big focus on the vocals for the show, and there's going to be a band on stage, and actually a number of the artists are going to be integrated to the band. So they'll come out, they'll be playing some of the instruments, then they'll come out and sing. And it's going to be a very, very great show. I'm very excited about it.
So you say a band. So I understand the band for this show is going to be bigger than usual.
Yes, it's going to be slightly bigger than usual, and it's all going to be on stage, and we're going to like create a bandstand for them, make it kind of a big band thing that they're integrated more into the show, and they will be coming out to our music director, Daniel Wideline, who's been incredible, is also a saxophone player, so he'll come out and be a part of the show playing the saxophone, and we're really trying to integrate. It's going to be directed by Roy Leitner, who's my associate artistic director, and we're going to really keep our audiences kind of a, you know, on a gala, you know, kind of a fancy end to the season.
Beautiful. So am I right that you were saying that that some of the performers, that is to say the singers, are going to be integrated into the band?
Yes, that's what's going to be really cool. I mean, I know maybe some of our people listening have seen, you know, there were different productions like Company that was done on Broadway where the performers actually played the instruments. We're trying to do something like that. And there's a lot of great talent in our cast, people that play the guitar, the ukulele, the saxophone. And I think it's a surprise for our audiences to see them have that side as well. And one of my really good friends, Stephanie Cadman, who will be coming out for her fifth season as well. She's from Canada and she's an amazing tap dancing fiddler. So she'll be, I don't know if you've seen her before, but she's incredible. So she'll be a part of the band and then come out and do her tap dancing and singing as well with the numbers.
Well, there's a multi-talented artist, but I have to say that the artists that you have coming to these events are so amazing. And the telling thing for me, and this really sticks in my mind, so if our listeners get getting tired of it, I'm sorry, but I remember at least one of your posters that had thumbnails of your artists, and you had like 100 artists on, or maybe even more on this poster for one summer. And these are Broadway artists. These are artists who are singing for movies or are talent for movies as voice or as body doubles in animation. And these are just the people that I've interviewed. So what sorts of folks are we going to hear in the Gala Celebration, which is yet to come in this season of Broadway Under the Stars?
Yes, we have an incredible lineup of performers. Some of our resident artists, Maggie Cancellor, has appeared on Broadway in Apple Tree and Finian's Rainbow. Eric Jackson has been on Broadway in multiple Broadway shows like Thoroughly Modern Millie. And we have a lot of people that have actually been in Wicked. So there'll be a number of them performing in the production as well. And my background, I was on Broadway in 42nd Street. So we have a number of people that have been on 42nd Street on Broadway and National tour, so there'll be some tap dancing in the show as well.
So how do you get your talent for this? I know that many of you are friends, but do you have that many friends?
Well, our friend base is expanding through the years. The interesting thing about our company is it's by referral only. So we do not have open auditions. And so the thing that's attracted a lot of the artists to come to Wine Country, obviously it's Wine Country and it's incredible. And they're intrigued by that, but they're more intrigued by the energy of the company and the values of the company and how we connect with the community. And we also do a lot of different things with our artists. It's kind of a retreat for them to be out here, a place where they get inspired to connect with their art again. So there's a buzz in New York and a buzz in LA to be able to be invited to actually put in an application for the company. So it's opened up an incredible amount of talent to people with a ton of credits who really come out here and they're energized and revived in their art, and they take that energy back to wherever they're going.
So you were talking about connecting to community. Talk about that.
Yes, we really focus. Sometimes when you do regional theater, or people have said when we do Broadway, you don't have a connection to the audience. Sometimes you do your show, you leave, and you never connect with the audience. Here before the shows, all the artists are out connecting to the community at the pre-show picnic, which has been a huge success. We also do different outreach projects every year. Each cast that comes in, they do an outreach project. Yesterday, there was actually a project with Becoming Independent that I believe it was here in Santa Rosa, where our artists worked with some of the patients and everything there. So we're trying to find ways. It's called Transcendence Theater. So we're breaking the boundaries of that artist. We're enhancing the artist-audience relationship. And many, the only way this can exist too is a lot of the community members house the artist. So they become really close friends with them. And we just try to connect with the community and uplift their entire lives through art on stage and off.
You're one of the founders of Transcendence Theater Company. How did you come up with this idea? And has it manifested in the way that you thought, or has it transcended that?
Well, it's always transcending because it never stays on the same plateau. It's been an incredible serendipitous adventure. The company actually started 9 years ago, or the idea for the company. So it was the end of 2007. And actually, many people have heard this story, but I had a creative collapse as an artist. And I had to, you know, kind of started asking those soul searching questions of how can you be of more service to the world? And what do we have special to bring to the world? And out of that came the vision for the theater company of creating an outdoor space, healthy company culture that was going to inspire artists. And actually, we put the I put the vision on a videotape that was sent to 5 friends in a top secret envelope, and they got it and they're like, this is incredible. How is any of this going to happen? And through these serendipitous, because we wanted to do a first project, serendipitous events at actually on a vacation, we went to Punta Banda, Mexico on a random vacation, and there was a theater in that town, and this town ended up giving us that theater for free for our first project in 2009. And since then, it's been an incredible journey, finding the park, continuing to grow the company, and I'm very happy because it's touching a lot of people's lives.
How did you end up at Jack London Park in Glen Ellyn, California?
We actually did a research trip across the United States in RVs. There were 6 of us, the original founders of the company. And we were doing research on theaters across America, what was working and what wasn't working. And we were also looking for a location. So when we hit Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Oregon, we saw that that was it was a destination theater. And so my husband, Brad, he scheduled more time in wine country because he thought that could be a possibility. So we had decided wine country at the end of that trip, but we were a bunch of actors that didn't have money to buy a winery. So this seemed really impossible, but we started taking action, and Brad found that due to sound and county regulations, you actually couldn't have a season of theater outdoors in wine country, Napa or Sonoma, in like its own place. And we didn't want to bounce from winery to winery. And the guy on the phone said, well, this is such a great idea. How do you get around it? And the first clue came from that the rules didn't apply on state land. And I was researching outdoor theaters across the country, saw that many started in parks, typed in parks on the internet, Sonoma parks, because we had chosen Sonoma, and they were all slated to close. It was literally the day after the park closures were announced, and they were looking for ways to keep them open. So Brad and Steven and I hopped in the car the next day, and rangers at Annadel State Park pointed us to Jack London. And that's how we ended up at Jack London State Park.
Wow. And my understanding that is that you kind of saved Jack London State Park. Like, it was scheduled to close, but it didn't close when you set up shop there.
Yes, we came at the most serendipitous time, and they said that we were looking for ways to keep the park open and that we had to test out the idea. So we had 6 weeks to pull off our first concert, which was a fundraiser for the park. Transcendence actually had $83 in its bank account. We borrowed money and had a whole bunch of people donate their time, and people said, like in Slonoma, that no one was going to come to the concert, and 900 people showed up that night. So we were able to do a fundraiser for the park, and that evening was such a success that they let us work to have a season the next year, and $5 of every ticket goes to help the park. And now in our fifth season, we've raised, it's a great partnership with the nonprofits, raised over $220,000 for Jack London State Park in terms of helping to keep it open.
Wow, that is amazing. And now the state can actually keep the parks open. So this has got to be a tremendous boon for them to have that kind of money in their coffers.
Yes, it's been really great in helping to not only give money to the park, but get more people to know about the park. There's a lot of people that attend our shows that had never been to Jack London before. They come back and hike. They come back and become supporters of the park or members of the park. And USA Today a couple years ago named the ruins the number two outdoor concert venue in the country that shouldn't be missed. So it's really helping to put the park on the map and celebrate Jack London's legacy because he's such an inspiring man who really inspired everybody to live life to the fullest.
Do you know where your audiences are coming from for Broadway Under the Stars?
They're coming from multiple different places. Obviously, there's a lot that come from Sonoma and especially the Santa Rosa area. But through the years, we've been trying to tap more into the tourist population that's coming. So there's people, I always ask people before the shows where they're from, and some of them will be like, I was visiting from Colorado, or I was visiting from Florida, or they have friends in the show. But the majority right now are from the area around here in Sonoma County area. But we have seen an increase on people coming from Marin and San Francisco.
You've been branching out, and you have performances during the year, not during the summer, but during the year as well. And I know you have one coming up on December 2nd through 4th, Joy to the World, at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts.
Yes, very excited. This is our second season of being able to bring the holiday show to the Luther Burbank Center. So Joy to the World is an incredible show filled with not only music from Broadway shows that are holiday themed, but a lot of the popular music, Christmas music, and just holiday music. And it's a really fun time, was very successful last year. So we've added shows this year and hope to be able to inspire more audiences who will come.
Well, the next performances coming up are September 9th through 11th. They are at Jack London State Park. For more information, go to the website.
BestNightEver.org.
BestNightEver.org. Amy Miller is my guest. She is the artistic director of Transcendence Theater Company. Broadway Under the Stars is the name of the summer set. And Joy to the World is December 2nd through 4th. At Luther Burbank Center for the Arts. Up next is the September 9th through 11th gala celebration. For more information, go to bestnightever.org.
.org.
Amy Miller, it's a pleasure visiting with you as always. And break a leg in the gala celebration.
Thank you so much. It's so great being able to talk to you today. Appreciate it.
Let's give away a pair of tickets. They will be to the September 9th performance of the Gala Celebration, which runs through the 11th. The ticket winners will be caller number 4 to 584-2020, 584-2020. Caller number 4 gets the tickets, a pair, to the September 9th performance of the Gala Celebration of Broadway Under the Stars by Transcendence Theater Company. I'm Charles Sipos. It's Curtain Call on KRCB Santa Rosa.
The point in feeling afraid. when we've got so much left to say.